whether or not we stop,
then we won't be able to.
Well, no, we have people who are resting, so let's rest for a moment.
Why don't you pause on that?
Call a meeting in order.
And thank you for the.
Fred?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Halpert.
Thank you.
We're on the line on time to get an authority. I wonder, do you think it's reasonable? Or take two and a half years to apply for and get a certificate? And of course, I'm assuming a certain number of protests, but I'm considering cases that I know. I wonder how we can, number one, cut down the problem beyond putting a lawyer in the transportation commission. How else can we shorten that time up? And I wonder what the real effect on the need of people is when it does take two years to determine the need or not for a certificate.
I don't think we ought to be able to rely on the applicant to tell the agency, the need, the service, and then go out and try to satisfy it through solicitation and interviews and what have you. We rely on reactive, everything, which is inherent in that delay.
We ought to be able to see the need and try to arrange to satisfy it before it becomes acute.
I think it's totally unreasonable to satisfy a parent's need years after it becomes apparent.
An exemption in the air commerce act granted within 30 seconds after the exemption is necessary to provide the public some manner. And I'll tell you that exemption is one that I have suggested be amended some time. Inherent in that 060 is that this exemption authority is set out in a manner of regulation. And if you look back at the FDA, regulation has to go through public notice, hearing, and promulgation, review by the agencies, the whole bit. In other words, the exemption section is not set out in a manner that's responsive to immediate action and the immediate remedies of the situation. It needs to be redrawn so that the commission can act in their discretion and upon the proper showing, almost immediately.
How long has it taken to grant emergency authority, in your recollection, in the worst case you can think of?
Well, May 6th, when the first started, we sat for 2 days, contacted Lohan, and I think they granted something like 10 or 12. Emergency exemption over the phone, told them to start flying, and followed all the wire. In case Fairbanks barrel.
They were flying up there over there, five passengers, a terrific job. Just contact with people that wanted to fly the route and could get going right now. We're getting calls from west, Barrow, and we're stranded, we can't get out of here. So everybody was flying that day and the next day.
I'd like to repeat Mr. Halpert's question. He asked about the worst case. I presume Mr. Johnson's been on the commission long enough to be able to tell us that. What is the longest, the worst situation? The longest is taking Grand Theft Authority.
I can't answer that, Mr. Chairman. I just really don't know. Sometimes when an exemption application is presented to us, it contains totally insufficient documentation to make us feel comfortable that we're acting within the statutory guidelines. I don't think that an exemption application has sat around very long because we don't find that there's an immediate urgent need and that the statute is satisfied, we just dismiss the application. A lot of times these exemption authorities come in with an application, or filed concurrently therewith, is an application for permanent authority. The exemption shot or the temporary request is simply an attempt by the applicant in some cases to short circuit the administrative trust and get operational right away. But there are certain guidelines under the present act that we have to live by, and I would say that I'm sorry I can't answer that in the extreme case. If there isn't any showing, we'll tell the guy to have a meeting, and we'll set your application down to permanent authority as soon as we can get it on the calendar. If you can demonstrate to us that the public is being deprived of something, give us something else that we can consider. So in the course of his satisfying his burden, it sometimes takes a couple weeks, maybe even a month, where we get the documentation in that's required. On the other end of the scale, like I said, I think we have granted some probably within a few minutes after we are presented with the case.
Thank you. I wonder if you could respond to that. I think it was in testimony, in conversation. We were told of the 22 emergency authorities granted, given period, in about half the cases, there was in fact no emergency shown.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. That exemption section's got a lot of language in there that kind of leaves you to wonder sometimes what it means. And we screwed it very broadly sometimes. An emergency means a lot of people, fire, famine, life, and death. On the other hand, it could mean that for some reason the applicant is demonstrating there's a need for him to be relieved, certain sections of the act which are restrictive on him and restrictive on the public need. And I admit that we have construed that restriction rather broadly. But I think that the public is going to be the beneficiary of that broad interpretation.
Mrs. Munson?
Earlier, or maybe it was yesterday. Mr. Bettis said that he felt that most of the surface transportation could be deregulated. Could I have some comments on this, Commissioner?
Surface transportation, that would include common contracts, motor carriers, it would include, matter of fact, private carriers who are now regulated because
because we require them to have certain kinds of identification on their vehicle, make sure they're not operating overweight, et cetera. It also includes the buses that I refer to earlier, and I have an idea that maybe the bus transportation could have some relaxation at the entry.
I don't recall Mr. Benish making that statement. Is that who you said?
I'm not sure. Was Mr. Benish the gentleman who had formerly been a commissioner? Yes.
Okay, and he said that surface transportation could be deregulated?
Yes. Apparently, Mr. Benish might have been remembering that way. I don't remember.
Well, I must have been dozing when you said that. I don't recall it. But anyway.
You did, though.
I'll bet that's when it was. I don't think I could elaborate on what Mr. Johnson has said other than to reiterate that buses, dump trucks, and tow trucks, which all are surface modes, certainly we have indicated our. Agreeing with the deregulation of those particular modes.
You just said towing? Towing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Hilbert?
Yes, sir. Commissioner Johnson, I'd like to know if...
What's your backup?
The calling. I understood a while ago from Commissioner Miller here that they considered the deregulation of dump trucks. They said they had been doing it in the last 2 years, and that anybody that come in and requested a permit got one. In that same line of thought, using that same criteria as calling it deregulation, what if anybody in the non-scheduled aircraft come in with that same situation and applied and was issued a certificate using that same situation, that way they would have a ticket and they would be insured, et cetera. Would you comment on that, please?
I'd like to propose something there, and there's a very important question there. It may be that the people might perceive this committee as sounding as though we're deregulators, and we are, and we're certainly very into some of it, but at the same time, the current law says something else. It would seem to me that what we've been told by the commissioners, and by the audit report, the commissioners have chosen to rewrite the law and deregulate an area on their own when they have no such mandate in the legislature. Now, I might personally agree with that, for instance, but I haven't yet agreed with that green button on the floor of the House. And I'm really wondering, starting Commissioner Johnson, where you thought you got the authority.
Chairman Brown, I guess that's why I pointed out in my remarks a couple days ago what Congress told Chairman Dan O'Neill. They told him to knock it off until he got the green light from them. And maybe that's what we're waiting for. Having failed to be able to communicate with the legislature for one reason or another, not pointing the finger at anybody, we chose to embark on a course that would, in effect, relax the entry restrictions from a policy standpoint. Of certain type of surface transportation carriers. We didn't have any suggestions, obviously, that's what we ought to do, nor anybody else. But through the course of proceedings, we assimilated this feeling that The legislature must have intended that this particular type of carrier enter the marketplace in a less restrictive manner than other types of carrier. And like I say, I guess we're waiting for the green or red light to come.
For instance, Sherwag, yesterday, the Department of Commerce comments that you say will be followed up by more details on Monday.
But you said, quotes, I wrote it down, generally agree with the audit division's recommendations. Except for recommendation number 14 with regard to town council and so forth.
Well, one of the problems is
I know from the response to recommendation number four The Commission agreed to implement recommendations and the Transportation Act. We would point out, however, it was not appear to be any practical way to give the Commission presentary and personnel and recommendations and so forth. How can the Commission generally agree with all of the audit recommendations, and yet from the looks of the budget, most of the resources that have been requested by the Commission that might accomplish some of these things have been rejected by the governor in preparation of the budget. Now, I think you answered that question halfway in another text yesterday, but I wonder if you could explain that to us now, please.
I believe I did mention yesterday that we did basically agree with all of them except 14, but we tempered that with the cost of implementing those. Some of these recommendations actually require no cost. They're done in-house with the resources available. I will agree with you. Number four basically would take more people, the way I read it and understand it. You will also note on the
Even though most of number four is merely a recommendation, the Commission knew what the statute said they do. Go ahead.
Do you want a response? I don't have one of that.
Well, that was just a comment on what you're saying. Go ahead with the rest of your answer.
What I was going to point out to you that you're well aware of, the request was for 1.6 million, 33 people, and it was knocked to 1.4 million, 30 people, same number of bodies they had previously. The obvious question that raises is how do you expect them to improve and do a better job when you're going to give them basically the same amount of money, although there is a increase in the dollar amount, but that's mainly what we call inflation increase. Basically, what the ATC has is what we call the continuation budget, i.e. doing more of the same. And it automatically raises the question, are we going to continue with the same problems we've had in the past? That's difficult to answer. And my response to that is the state is not flush with money. We do not feel that we can honor every request that every agency has. During the budgetary process, which was long and involved, I cannot recall one division who did not ask for more people. The Department of Commerce and Economic Development added one body. That one body went to occupational license. It is true that I should distinguish some things here. We do not have the authority over the ATC that we do over one of our own divisions. It's more of a limited line authority. I would classify it perhaps as administrative support in nature. But getting back to the budget, the decision was made that they would have to make do on $1.4 million. That's the governor's request. Yes, we want them to do better. Yes, we want them to institute the audit recommendations, and they're going to have to better allocate their existing resources to do it.
I would like to, I suppose the commissioners follow up with regard to that matter. But I have a question about economic regulation. As far as I can figure it out, it's regarding tariffs and long haul trucking and so forth.
It almost seems as though the Transportation Commission goes along with the industry organization or whatever.
And I was just wondering, what is your guidepost or formula, catchphrase, whatever you want to call it,
for determining what a reasonable rate of return is and how do you do it? I'd like to ask that question, Mr. Johnson. Sophisticated procedures that we have developed in-house, we have tended to use the method of the Commerce Commission in determining those issues when presented with a rate increase.
I wonder if Harris might elaborate about the statement on page 14 of the report, third paragraph. Says two commissioners declined regulatory policies, one is allowed carrier fair rate of return on investment. Neither one of the DCC did not have sufficient information or the skilled personnel to determine carrier's rate of return. The other did not have any specific percentage in mind, mainly in the carrier safety equipment.
Mr. Harris, could you explain the background of the auditor's interview? Mr. Chairman, this paragraph derives personal interview, as I recall, from the main response to that question was that it depends on circumstances in each situation. What a sufficient rate of return is, and that is about as clear an answer as we can get. And this paragraph reflects the statement of the three commissioners.
Well, I think one of the things that bothers me about that is, of course, if we're going to be regulating the economic, say, long haul truckers, for instance, that we ought to be doing it if we've decided to do it. And it's a little bit unfortunate to have the auditor report and the auditor's findings find out commissioners don't have some kind of standard procedure. And you've adopted procedures, you need to do something, you need more resources in order to do it, you need to make a decision that you haven't made, or do you need to regulate the tariff authority regarding long-haul trucking operations? Again, I'll go to Commissioner Johnson.
How much is it going to cost to get the help, the additional personnel, or the expertise indicated in the audit report?
as a suggestion, I would like to offer a possibility of an alternative. Rather than thinking in terms of reclassifying some of the positions, for example, we have a person classified as a specialist who will be retiring here. His present salary is approximately $44,000. We have a for instance, one of our hearing officers, with the salary of around $45,000, we have a type of expert, financial people, analysts, economists, engineers, with very little increase in our budget, even none, or analysts, accountants, or analysts, going forward, but I suggest you could probably start to track the salary around $45,000 a year. So it may very well be possible to at least start the implementation of some of the things that were pointed out without thinking in terms of how much more money we're going to have in order to do this.
Yes, I would like to explain something. I was not saying that you necessarily should do some heavy regulatory policy that is different from what you're doing now. It's just in response to the audit, to the commissioner's perhaps the other two, declined a good regulatory policy is one which would allow a carrier to return. The only reason why I was asked that question was regarding a rate of return standard. I don't know which commissioners we ought to have response on that matter from the other commissioners. What are you doing if that is the standard opinion of the two commissioners? Why is it used, or if it is the standard, why don't you know what a rate of return is? And if you don't know what a rate of return is, why decided it? And if you haven't decided it, why should we regulate that area of economic activity? We'll go to Governor Miller now, please.
Mr. Chairman, I stopped beating my wife just last week. That was quite an involved question. I don't personally have an advantage over Commissioner Cubley in coming second. I do not recall responding to that particular question, and I don't know if he will say the same thing, but I honestly don't recall that I was one of the commissioners responding to that question. Other than what Commissioner Johnson said, as far as the operating ratio is concerned, that has been the method that we have used probably long before I've been on the commission.
Commissioner Cooper, could you respond to that?
Chairman, if I remember right, I think I was too. This is real complicated. I'm trying to figure out some of the answers. One of the big things we had was two of the large carriers that we got into greater return, fair return on their investments. And one said, well, your office is quite a union. You're a low-paid person. He said, file 21,000. Well, I'm not. My office is non-union, and a girl like that probably gets eight or nine thousand. Then they get an argument about the cost of operations and where do you go from there. I depend a lot on our freight people, the one Johnson talks about, about 15 years, and we're really going to get a lot. I would like to have someone on, Jeff is a good analyst, go out in the field. We don't have that. As far as what is a good rate of return, I guess some of them turn down, do we turn down? for at least a compensation of all the trucks on the highway, we must not have done too good. 1978, 12, either locked their doors, went into bankruptcy, merged, or in the process of bankruptcy. The track record on the highway is not too good. Financially, with the trucking industry. I don't think we can take the blame for it. I don't think we can claim that we've kept them all out of bankruptcy.
I would just like to ask what $44,000 a year tariff does.
How to set out his book count, 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 how to set appropriate. They discuss the limits of their permit, they write orders on a direction of the commission, they appear in hearings and testify as expert witnesses. They give the commission a certain amount of advice pertaining to everything, 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 perta
we simply rely on them for a great number.
Sounds as though the tariff specialist actually has maybe a third of their responsibility, but we would normally expect to be the tariff specialist. I mean, I would hope you have some secretaries and budget, and it would seem that you don't have to have them doing all that.
I think the answer to my question was, I assumed from that title they would probably be a specialist in determining tariff. And reading that same paragraph on page 14, said that ATC really does not have sufficient information or the skilled personnel. I'm curious about these tariff specialists. Thanks.
Yes, everybody has questions. I've got my second wind or something. Mr. Hurlburt, you know, I used to run a TV station, control board. I really worked from 4 o'clock until about 3 in the morning, so maybe I'm just getting back in my old work habits. Mr. Hurlburt.
Yes, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I was just wondering on some of these tariffs that I'm acquainted with, seem to me around the country or somewhere unfair. Are you familiar with the Northern Air Cargo's tariff in that they charter out to a point? And then they claim they own the backbone and get a double charter essentially out of it.
Mr. Johnson, I did have a couple of questions on your response to our relations. By and large, the response was pretty favorable, but there was a various agreement. And I wanted to ask you on recommendations, a number of what we perceive as the enforcement action, and you responded that by and large that was due to the way lawyers operate and the view of procedural delays being in the final sentence as well. Well, we broke down the enforcement action that we analyzed between those which went to a hearing and those not to a hearing. I would imagine that attorneys are engaged on the ones that went to a hearing, but on the cases on the enforcement action that do not go as far as a hearing. Are attorneys normally engaged by the persons involved?
Attorneys are engaged on the time of settlement matter should not involve a hearing. We have stated with seven months.
Do you think that is a satisfactory time, or not, what would be a better time?
Those actions, I gather, those examples are kind of a cross-section of all of them, some of them are very detailed, some of them aren't. I can tell you that I consider a part of the action within a 30-day period, and only because we have to give some reasonable notice of hearing, so first prepare for it.
And also you have subsection R, 3AA 60OTM, with regard to the practitioner's requirement to cause professional liquor, also you have subsection T, that any such person not conform to the standards, the commission may find permit person superior appearance under these standards.
Well, since you have the authority to do that, to remedy the problem that you addressed in response to recommendation number five, why didn't you do it?
We found that the statement that appears to be caused by the delay is being indicated in the best compliance
feeling that has developed not only in the case of enforcement action, but also over the years in cases that are front of the commission in terms of request authority, etc. I hope that I don't offend anybody with that, but that was the exception on my part. That I have gained through the course of many meetings being on the commission. And I think it's very difficult for us to determine that it was an intentional delay, most of the ways to be within the prescribed limits of the other regulations you'll find in our procedures. And in this regard, it indicates that a rehabilitation or reenactment of our procedural rig is overdue.
Well, the reason I said it in the way in which I did is if a quasi-judicial body, not a very limited view of these things, and if the courts do not, nobody else will. The sanction you have against a practitioner for you is a much greater power than the sanction you have against any of their clients. That is, I think it'd be very unusual for instance, the Supreme Court of Alaska to reverse the determination by you that attorney X and Y can no longer practice for you for reasons you've stated. Because the courts like to do that too, on view alone. As a result, in the ten years, I'm not going to say the same names, but I've certainly seen a couple of attorneys who would be happy to have a client file in opposition, everything filed before the EC several years ago. And it would seem that that pattern certainly the commission might at least talk to the individual, advise the individual, advise the rules, and you do have that sanction because if you never use that sanction, it's only on the books. The courts, and if in other areas of my profession, the bar never uses it, then the natural tendency of practitioners before your lawyers to delay because the balancing economic decisions within their offices and balancing who's likely to bill this month based on the work, the pressure to settle be delayed even when the intention is not to harass and kill the other guy. And it really seems to me that you could use regulations. So they sue you if you think you're right, or they sue you. I think my profession, better police and tribunal deals with the use of sanction. I think that your commission is not the only one involved in that regard.
Mr. Harris,
if you would continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Johnson, recommendation number 10. We brought out the commission, often issues orders prior to the preparation of written orders supported by findings of fact, including law. And we cited a regulation which requires that the commission orders be in writing and contains findings of fact, including law. Nevertheless, he responded and said that, commission believes that issuing its orders and answering compliance with the statute. How can you make that statement in light of your regulation?
Well, I happen to believe it. And this is another case, we could go back to the comments by the chairman that we haven't got green light on yet.
Excuse me, Brown, I think you're referring to the enforcement action where we couldn't find the backup material that should have been there.
Just a moment, Commissioner Johnson.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Johnson. We recommend the commission stop making safety inspections at scale house troopers. We're also making inspections there in a duplication of effort. And I don't understand your response. He says that the last trooper vehicle safety inspections performed at the scale house are ineffective because the scale house is closed for a large part of the time. Well, that's true, they are closed for a large part of the time. But when they're closed, neither is the ATC inspector there doing inspections. Could you explain that for me, please?
How do you know the ATC inspector? And just recently, we conducted a seminar on the safety of operation and the economic operation within the River. with 24 hour manned observation of our own ATA scale house were not manned in a manner that you could successfully accomplish the observation of the highway. And I don't believe that can ever be accomplished when the scale houses are open. For eight hours a day, or ten hours a day, if you will. It's got to be open, period. And that's all I have to say. Brown, I'd like to ask you, when was that period of inspection you were talking about?
You said that it happened just recently, that was an example of the ATC inspection program.
Chairman Brown, we did that about a month ago during the month of January, and this is the Eagle River scale house loaded, looking north of Vancouver and the highway. Preceding that, we had our people stationed at Fox, I think it was. we had a week of continuous round-the-clock surveillance at that point.
I'm not sure that
reclassifying some positions that are currently on the board. I'm going to give the commissioner kind of accounting expertise to adequately determine what our proper tariffs is to state and comply with the economic regulation of the transportation industry. That's my comment.
Mr. Halford?
Thank you. I wonder if the commissioner might respond to this. Do you think the Alaskan operators would and I'm talking about the existing operators, particularly a lot of the smaller operators,
some of the bigger operators.
Do you think the operators are really willing to tolerate the level of recording and auditing required for effective economic regulation?
Also, without going into detail, in case the commission was wondering why we're chuckling here and circulating around. There was a piece of paper originally that someone started out, termination following schedule, a suggestion of one year reserve certain things from jurisdiction. And a couple of years later, reserve certain other things from jurisdiction, up in 1992, remove eight floor in the K building.
Mr. Chairman, we're on the 10th floor.
Oh, 10th floor. Well, he's on the 8th floor. Maybe we ought to do that, too.
I think it's empty right now.
Somebody else,
I think that Mr. Wilterson pointed out a serious dilemma, and it's a very frustrating thing to us. We can try to prune and push broad jurisdiction, and we might have suspicion that nearly everybody had to be regulated, but we're going to try to deregulate some of it, or something like that. We leave you with any jurisdiction at all, and then all of the audit recognition, it still seems to me that there may be a serious problem. And yet, I look at $1.4 million, and I wonder if it is only that large historic place, and that maybe somebody wisely managing $1.4 million a year might be able to do more than apparently the audit has done over the last few years. That's a lot of money. I'm sure that we all know some businessmen make their pretty good managers. They think run a pretty good operation. $1.4 million. I hope the answer is not that all of your employees leave at 4:20 or 4:01 or 2:30 or something like that. I don't know what the problem is, but there is a problem there. We're not quite sure what the dilemma is. We're presented with a commission that doesn't seem to be able to get a job done. We're presented with a budget year, we can hardly add a lot of positions. We have people saying, even though it doesn't do its job well, keep it a part of it. Even though we know we won't be able to give them the money so they'll be able to do the job. If we perceive a job as necessary, that's kind of a frustrating 2020 for all of us. And I'm not just preaching or doing a monologue, I'm offering that for comments by the commissioners. But also, I think maybe Mr. Wagner has something with regard to that.
Yes, I know the hour is late, but I've just taken a few minutes. I have some empathy for Mr. Robinson, but if we could run down the recommendations very quickly. Item one is eliminating guide lodges and dump trucks. That takes no more staff or money, so we can eliminate that one from budget considerations. If anything, if we did that, we'd have those resources to allocate amongst the other functions. Two is clean up the statute and fees. I don't see that that takes more staff or money. Three is repeal the Ferry Act, basically. I don't see that that takes more staff or money. Four, yes, that's the dealing with the tariffs and economic regulation. I notice I'm looking at the ATC's staffing chart. I see three tariff specialists. Salaries range between, I think it's $34,000 and $42,000. I'm not sure what kind of people you get for that, but I would think you get pretty someone fairly competent, I would think. So, number four would take money if these three full-time tariff positions cannot perform that task. Five's enforcement, I put a question mark. It does appear that part of that recommendation deals with suspending fines and things like that. Would that require more field agents or not? I'm not sure. Six is timely processing. I've got another no question mark. Is that something that can be done by internal streamlining of the operation? Seven, commission orders, that's a no. Eight, ethics, no. Nine, free rides, no. 10, order associated with statutes, no. Qualifications of commissioners for number 11, I don't think that takes any more staff. Public meetings would take no more staff. Review of the filing system, I don't feel that would necessitate staff increases. And 14, we disagree. So while Mr. Wilkerson does have some good points there, we have some problems with budgets. I sometimes call it the Alyeska syndrome. Do you necessarily cure all your problems when you bury them with money? Perhaps if we can, what's the definition of a true manager? If we take the resources we have and apply them efficiently and effectively, maybe we can do what has to be done with statutory guidelines.
Yes, I think that, of course, depending on what of the recommendations are implemented by the legislature, some will decrease the amount of activity by the present staff, and other of the recommendations will either increase the activities of the present staff or demand other types of personnel, perhaps reclassification or whatever. I don't really think that we're talking about that much money. I could be wrong, but my gut feeling is that we're not talking about that much difference in the budget to implement these reforms.
Of course, in the event we were not to zero you out, finance raise, but to have some action continue, we will then be introducing legislation you and the department request by the fiscal board. And I'm sure that whatever bill we introduce to this committee, unless we introduce to committee report, and therefore we will have a chance to look at that at a time. In the meantime, it's kind of a circular thing because it affects our taxation now too.
And before we have the anchors, please. As far as one thing that hasn't been brought up is the number of applications, grants, transfers, and everything. We've run between backlog all the time, 500 cases. Mr. Johnson, we're set for calendar three months ahead, and I think Mr. Halpert asked the question of why it's taken so long. Well, we probably do act on some that call a lot. Some of the callers don't blame us. We do put some of those on the top because I don't know half of them or percentage of them. I do think that some of the regulations have gone down in the Attorney General's office. Some of the legislation has been cut down. Some regulations have been cut down. Some regulations have been cut down.
I agree with
report. And I do think that some of these terms are near with you, but you believe in them, are enacted, will cut down the time.
Doing that. One of the ways was to
possibly reclass one or two of the positions into a more appropriate classification such as that suggested by the Audit Committee.
That's only part of the implementation of it. I want to make it perfectly clear that I don't think we have the wherewithal to do the whole thing ourselves. Thank you very much. I think Rome has some questions. They sound like they addressed the budget document, so maybe.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Brown. One question I have refers to the budget request submitted management budget on the 4th of October. Page 672. States, first paragraph, FY 1978 investigated, 87 formal complaints and citations filed resulting in assessment by the Commission of $34,765 civil penalties against respondents found to be in violation of statutes. In the legislative water report, on page 15, section 5B, The statement reads approximately 80 cases. I'll read B first. The Commission previously spent all of the civil penalties assessed as violations. Approximately 80 cases during fiscal year 1978 resulted in fines assessed by the Commission. In 46 cases, all part of the fines were suspended. The amount suspended equals 74% of the total fines assessed. Now, just doing some fast mathematics, the Number of cases, 46 cases were dismissed. It leaves you with something like 4.65% of all the cases filed with the commission resulting in citations with fines. I'm curious too. I believe on the basis of the dismissal, 4%. It leaves actual revenue to the general fund or money collected at $35,038.90. Is that a fair statement, and could I ask perhaps for an explanation of the general nature of the 87 formal complaints as a collective group, and then the types of cases that were specifically cited with fines.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. If fines were suspended, what are the reasons for suspending?
Yes, I'll respond to that. Very many of these citation cases, which are just a citation done by a field agent on the spot, either at a scale house or along the road somewhere, many cases they are either, well, let's just say many cases are minor violations. And very, very frequently they are first offenders. I feel, and I very strongly feel this way, that the Commission should have flexibility in this regard where we're trying to gain compliance, not punishment. And that's the reason that the Commission has taken that prerogative as far as suspending fines are concerned.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just looking at the straight numbers, 87 complaints with citations, 485 filed. That's actually 17.97% of the complaints that actually resulted in some formal decision on the part of the Commission. Isn't this a relatively small finding that resulted in some particular action?
I'm sorry, I guess I don't follow you completely, Mr. Bloom.
This laid hour, I'm not sure that much sense, but again, I guess what I'm coming back to is that you end up with 4.625% that actually resulted in revenues, and I'm curious if the statement also, the BRU, that indicates that there were $134,765 in civil penalties assessed, but is that an actual figure?
I can't answer that off the top of my head. I don't know how this figure relates with the information in the audit report. I'd just be guessing if I tried to answer your question specifically.
Perhaps Mr. Wagon can shed a little light.
Not really. I would ask a question, though. It says we're assessed. When it's assessed, then I would think that you could suspend part of that assessment. Would that be a correct statement? And then I would assume that part of the 134,000 were suspended. But I do not.
I suspect that is the case.
Yes. If Commissioner Johnson or Commissioner Cooper have a comment on that, you don't have to offer one if you don't have one.
I might point out, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Wilson said that it was 134,775 collected.
Everything else, right, and walk around the truck and let them let through glaring. That has stopped.
I'd like to ask Mr. Wilson to reconcile the numbers that I've cited.
Madam Chairman, the number that we have on page 27 report labeled revenue collected. This would have been the dollar amount of money collected in the county contract of the PCC during FY77. And the number in the budget documents is part of their budget submission. And sometimes they think there's a lot of difference.
In fact, the 77% of the fines being suspended would lead to probably a dollar figure.